We're into good stuff now. And this has been absolutely amazing. I've had 2 weeks to get ready for this sermon, and it has been an absolute joy of 2 weeks. I wish I could make it mandatory. I wish I had enough power or enough authority or enough clout in each one of our lives. I wish I could make it mandatory that each one of us would spend 2 weeks studying the last two chapters of Revelation. I really, really do. I mean, it has been the greatest blessing. I was trying to figure out how I was going to try to wrap chapter 21 and 22 together so I could be done with Revelation today. I'm not even going to be able to be close to doing that. But it has just been the most uplifting, encouraging, amazing 2 weeks of study that I think I've ever experienced in ministry. And I don't know why that is. There's just something about thinking about heaven that puts everything into perspective in an amazing way. So here we are. We're in Revelation chapter 21. All the bowls of wrath, all the different things have been poured out. The judgment has happened. All these things are done. All the hard stuff is over with. And here we are in Revelation chapter 21, and everything is being made new. Listen to what it says. It says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Now the dwelling of God is with man, and he will live with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.' He who was seated on the throne said, 'I am making everything new.' Then he said, 'Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.' He said to me, 'It's done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To him who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost from the spring of the water of life. He who overcomes will inherit all of this, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexual immoral, those who practice magic arts, and the idolaters, and all the liars, their place will be in the lake, in the fiery lake of burning sulfur. And this is the second death. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and said to me, 'Come, and I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb.' And he carried me away in the spirit to a mountain great and high and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. It shone with the glory of God, and its brilliance was like that of a precious jewel, like a jasper, clear as crystal. It had a great high wall with 12 gates, and with the 12 angels at the gates. On the gates were the written names of the 12 tribes of Israel. There were 3 gates on the east, 3 on the north, 3 on the south, and 3 on the west. The wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. The angel who talked with me had a measuring rod of gold to measure the city, its gates, and its walls. The city was laid out like a square as long as it is wide. He measured the city with the rod and found it to be 12,000 stadia in length and as wide and high as it is long. He measured its walls and it was 144 cubits thick by man's measurements, which the angel was using. The wall was made of jasper and the city of pure gold, as pure as glass. The foundations of the city walls were decorated with every kind of precious stone. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedonian, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth carnelian, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, and the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, and the 11th jacinth, and the 12th amethyst. The 12 gates were 12 pearls, and each gate made of a single pearl. The great street of the city was of pure gold, like transparent glass. I did not see a temple in the city because the Lord Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and the Lamb is its lamp. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. On no day will its gates ever be shut, for there will be no night there. The glory and honor of the nations will be brought into it. Nothing impure will ever enter it, nor will anyone who does what is shameful or deceitful, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Chapter 21 of Revelation. I have to admit, the first probably half dozen times I read it, it seemed, kind of flat. And I don't mean flat. It seemed unimpressive. And this is heaven. And I'm just being very honest. I remember reading it the first several times, and maybe this is the first time you've ever heard it in completion, chapter 21 of Revelation, and you're thinking, man, I thought it was going to be more. And I remember thinking the first several times I read it, thinking, wow. But see, when we read things, a description that someone else has given to us, it can never compare with what is really going on. I have to laugh because, you know, Steve and Carrie aren't here this morning. Steve and Carrie Capes took a new job about a year ago. They're delivering campers all over the nation. I mean, all over the place. They're going, I think they've hit every corner of our nation completely. They've driven all over the place. And it was so funny because when they first got the job and started doing this, Steve, and sometimes like at 2 o'clock in the morning and stuff, Steve would send me a text of the different places. It's kind of like, where's Waldo at this time? He'd send me this text with a picture of these different places that, and he'd write this big description, or he would call me and he would say, guess where I'm at this morning, or guess where I'm at tonight, or guess what's going on? I'm like, Steve, I have no idea where you're at today. And he would give this description. I remember one time there at the Grand Canyon. He was there at the Grand Canyon. It must have been like 4:30 in the morning or so. For us, it was like 6 o'clock. And he calls me at 6 o'clock in the morning. He's like, guess where I'm at this morning? I'm like, I have no idea, Steve. He goes, I'm standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and the sun is just ready to come up. And he was trying to describe the beauty of the Grand Canyon. And he's telling me, yeah, and there's this lady down the edge, and she's standing by this big rock, but she looks so small. And he's giving all this detail. And I'm like, yeah. I don't know what to say. Because I'm just being very honest. He was so excited and so enthralled. And that's awesome. That's great. But if I haven't seen it, if I haven't experienced it, if it's not hitting your senses, it's hard to describe what this is going to be like. And you got to understand, John has been flooded with these visions that has been going on. And when he writes Revelation 21, his mind is probably on total overload of what's happening. And for us to stand here and try to describe heaven, it's not even going to be close. But as the week, 2 weeks went on, and this is why I wish I could make it mandatory that everyone would just contemplate, read Revelation 21 and 22 daily and just take time to let it sink in and allow the Holy Spirit of God that dwells within you start to give you the sense of what heaven is going to be like just looking at these pages and at these words. Because there became such an overwhelming sense of peace and joy and tranquility that I cannot find words to to describe. I tried to take notes from all the different places I'd studied, and finally I realized that heaven is indescribable. John tries to put it down on paper when he says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth." You got to understand, all that we see now, all that we experience, all that our eyes have seen, our hands have touched, we've smelled, all that we know in existence right now, listen to me, is going to be destroyed. Completely. God is going to completely wipe it away by fire. Not going to be by flood, it's going to be by fire. Everything, the seas, the oceans, everything is going to be destroyed. And when I say that, I don't say that in a scary means. I say it in a side idea of put things into perspective of our life. Because the things that we are thinking, again, are so important, that we're striving for, that we're accumulating, that we're working for, that we're putting effort and time and energy and all these different things, everything that we know will be gone. In a flash. And then God is going to start all over. And he's going to create, this is what he says. He says, there's a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth that we know, that we experience, has passed away, it's gone. And there was no longer any sea, it says. And he says, I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. So here's what's going on. God has created a new earth, all right? An incredibly new place. And I go back to creation. I go back to Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2. And the amazingness of what this earth was originally is absolutely incredible, the way God describes it and the way he created it. And when he recreates it, it's going to be even more amazing. And in the middle of his creation, in the middle of this new earth and this new heaven, there's going to be in this new Jerusalem, this city that's coming down. And I don't know if this is actually how it's going to be, but this is how John is trying to describe it, because he's trying to describe God's presence in a way that we can't understand, because Jerusalem and God is how God is going to live among us. It's how he's going to be with us. And that's how God originally intended creation to be. He understood, even when he created it the first time, he understood that sin was going to come into the world. He understood that it was going to be wrecked. He understood that it was going to go through this period of time where Satan would rule and evil would be in this earth. He understood that. That's why he created the sun and he created the moon, so that there would be light in the world, because he was not going to be able to, listen to me, he was not going to be able to be in the world. So he created a representation of his light in the sun. Can we just hit that real quick? It's later on in the text. But when it says, I did not see a temple in the city of God, in verse 22, the city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light. Can you just, we got to get this in perspective. There's not going to be a need for any sun or any moon or any other type of light. God's presence will be a constant light in every nook and cranny of the world. There will be no shadows. This morning I was driving down the road and it was beautiful. The sun was coming up, but there were shadows. And I like shadows. They're kind of cool. But when God's presence, there's going to be no shadows. It's going to be an amazing light. And it's not going to be a light from the sun that when you're in it, you're like, oh, I'm so hot and it's burning me. It's not going to be that type of light. It's going to be a constant radiance of his glory all the time. There's going to be no darkness. How amazing is that? Some of you are thinking, well, it doesn't, you know, when am I going to get to sleep? Here's the thing. There's going to be no need for sleep, because you're not going to get tired. You see, all the things in this world that weigh us down have come from sin, has come from the fall of man, when we took of the forbidden fruit. All the things that weigh us down, this is part of the 2 weeks that I've been experiencing. I have been trying to imagine what life would be like without the influence of sin in my life. Not being tired, because sin wears us down. Not living in fear, because fear is a part of sin. Can you imagine that? not living with any fear at all, living a life completely in boldness and in power and in, I just can't even imagine it. I don't think we realize how much sin weighs down our lives, how much it affects every part of who we are. And it's going to be gone. Can you imagine that there's going to be no death when he says that he's created it all new? It's going to stay new. It's all going to stay new because there's no death, there's no decay, there's no deterioration in God's new earth and his new kingdom. It's going to stay new. Just think about it. You're only going to need one set of clothes. If we need clothes at all, you're not going to wear out. Your knees aren't going to hurt. You're not going to get blisters on your hands. You're going to be completely new, and there's going to be no decay to who you are. Is that amazing? I'm excited. You know, the last couple of weeks, I got to read all these different people's description of what they think heaven is going to be like, and just all the different new colors and the new smells, and just taking a breath. Some people describe just taking a breath is going to be an amazing experience. This is going to be like, it's going to be incredible. Just taking a single breath, and you get to do it for eternity, and there's no wearing out. There's no getting tired. It's going to be a constant experience. And the most amazing part of it is God's presence in the middle of all of it. Listen to what it says. It says, I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. And I can't imagine what this is going to be like. You see this massive, I don't know if it's actually going to be a massive city or if this is just John's way of trying to describe the presence of God enveloping or overcoming or overwhelming the earth's presence. We've never experienced that. We've got the Holy Spirit that dwells within us, but God's presence being everywhere, his light shining everywhere at one time. It says it's coming down from heaven, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for a husband, prepared. You know, John or Jesus said in John 14, he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. Remember that? When I go, I'll come back to take you to be with me where I am. It's being prepared. It's being prepared like a bride. Like a bride. Beautifully dressed for her husband. That's pretty amazing imagery if you think about it. Now, we've been married nearly 30 years, right? Yes. And she always looks beautiful, always, to me, all the time. Takes time every morning to do her hair, put her makeup on, get dressed in nice clothes. But she's never spent as much time as she did on her wedding day. Right? Lexi, I'm just going to pick on you. You're here this morning. You're thinking, man, I sat in the back row for a reason, but he's still picking on me way back here. So, Lexi, do you have someone to do your hair, your wedding day coming up? What's her name? You don't know her name? Probably someone to do your makeup. Someone fitted your dress, I suppose. Yeah. Flowers? Flowers, yep. Hair, makeup. What am I forgetting? There's all other kinds of things I know. Her nails, absolutely. Nails? Yep. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. What am I forgetting, Lexi? Checkbook. Someone has to have the checkbook, right? Pay for all that stuff. I got Jody's attention when I said that. As soon as I said that, he went instantly red and went like this. Yeah. The imagery that he's giving to us, like a bride prepared for her husband, beautifully dressed for her husband, you know, that's the hours spent in preparation and getting ready is what God is trying to convey to us. He says, you know what? This isn't something where she just rolled out of bed. You know what I'm saying. Rolled out of bed, went in the shower, washed your hair, and, you know, did this and put on whatever it was that you're going to put on for the day. You know, it's not like that. God is meticulously planned, prepared, designed, got ready the things that are prepared for us in heaven. He spent 6 days creating all of heaven and earth the first time. He spent over 2,000 years now getting ready for it now. We can't imagine. We can't put it into words what he has prepared for us. He says, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them, and he will be their God. Ah. Again, take 2 weeks. Think about it. Pray about it. Allow God's Spirit to just indwell within you the amazingness of dwelling with God. There's a song that we sing every single time that we go to the nursing home. We did it last week, and every single week we sing the song. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. You know what I'm saying? What is that song? In the garden. You know what? Of all the songs that we sing, except for maybe When the Roll is Called Up Yonder, because I like that one, I make everyone raise their hands and have a good time. But of all the songs that we sing when we're at the nursing home, when we sing In the Garden, the peace, I wish you could be there and look at people's faces, right, Karen? When we sing In the Garden, there's a different countenance on people's faces. There's a joy that comes with the knowledge and the understanding of that personal relationship with God, that you walk in the garden alone. When he speaks, the birds hush their singing. The amazing presence of God is going to be incredible. And you know what? Just trying to describe it to people, so many of us are sitting there thinking, well, do you really think it's going to be that amazing? Yes, I do. I think it's going to be absolutely incredible. You know what? So many times we've been told what heaven is going to be like, and we've got this idea. I read so many different times. I don't know why everyone's quoted this little thing from Bill Hybels. He says, you know, when I was a kid, he was in choir. Bill Hybels. Everyone seems to use this illustration. He was a kid. He was in choir in church, and he was required to go to church choir all the time. They made him put those robes on. You know, I'm talking about the long robes with a little zipper, and they're made to stand up there on the bleachers for long periods of time singing the songs, and the choir director would say, this is what heaven is going to be like, and every little kid is thinking, oh my God, I don't want to go to heaven. Put on this hot robe and stand here and be still for all, and someone's wagging their finger. Sometimes I think that, and it's true, how many else have had that image of thinking, oh man, I don't know if I can sing for eternity. Whew! That's going to wear me out. Not even close. But with all the things that God has created in heaven, the part that's going to be the most amazing is the relationships. Listen to what he says. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He says he's going to wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more death. No more death. No more decay. All things will be made new, and they're going to stay new. There will be no more mourning or crying or pain, for the old ordered things have passed away. Think about relationships that you've got right now. Huh. Don't people just annoy you? What? Did that actually come out? I mean, honestly, even the best of relationships. I mean, I love my wife. I really do. Love her. Sometimes she just annoys me. Can I tell the story? I guess I am anyway. We've been married for almost 30 years, and I have never, this week I learned something about my wife. We took 7th and 8th graders to Hannibal, Missouri. Thank you, Dean, for reminding me we did that. This morning I forgot. He said, how is Missouri? And I was like, I don't know. I haven't been to Missouri. And I was just there on Monday. Yeah, seriously, I had no idea what you were talking about. I was just there on Monday. Anyway, so we took all the 7th and 8th graders from PCA to Hannibal, Missouri to go see Mark Twain stuff and all these different things. And we drove two different vehicles. Kathy drove our vehicle, and I drove this big van with all these girls in it. And I have this rule whenever I go on a field trip. It doesn't matter who I go with. When we do a school event, I always stay at the back of the line. I always, you know, there's always a convoy of vehicles and stuff, and I always stay at the back because inevitably someone breaks down or isn't paying attention and makes a wrong turn or does, you know, something happens, and I always think, you know what, I can at least be helpful enough to stay at the back and do that. But there was only two of us, and it was Kathy in the front and I was in the back. You would think after 2 days of driving that I would be going insane with how many girls were in the back. Catherine, you were one of them. You would think those girls would be driving me crazy as I'm driving, but it wasn't the girls, it was Kathy driving in front of me. I had no idea. And I love you, I do. Every curve in the road. Every curve. I mean, every turn. You know, there are a lot of turns in the road between here and Hannibal. Lots. Every turn, every hill that we experience while we're driving, we break for. Every one of them. Enough said. Exactly. We're going for a drive after this today. And I know where it comes from. I know where it comes from. But after a while, it just drives you crazy. You're the same way? I'm not following you ever. Okay. So, but here's the thing. There's a point to this. In heaven, that's all gone. There's going to be, listen to, the relationships we have, even the ones with the most annoying people that we know, the annoyances are gone. You know why I can say that? Because of you guys making faces at each other for? Because the things that make them annoying, the pressure that they're feeling because of the sin of this world is gone. The fear of crashing, going around the curve that happened 28 years ago is gone. We become a new creation. We start to live a brand new life with no fear. No fear. No problems, no heartaches, no troubles. No staying up at night wondering if the kids are going to get home. Do you know how much that affects you? All the concerns of life. Where am I going to sleep? Am I going to have a place to lay my head tonight? There's been a place prepared for you. Am I going to have enough food? You're going to have to worry about that. All these things have melted away. And the only concern, and it's not even a concern, the only thing that is going to be our life's, motivation, inspiration, is God. And He will be so much more amazing than you will ever imagine in this world. And the relationships that we have are the only things that we're going to be taking with us into this heaven. The people that we know, the people that we've influenced, those are the rewards that God has laid up for us. It's going to be amazing. There was one guy, I can't remember what his name was, he said there's only going to be one man-made thing in heaven. And I had to really think about this. There's only going to be one man-made thing in heaven. You know what it is? Nope. Not the relationships. because God's creating those. There's only going to be one man-made thing in heaven. Think about it just for a little bit. Anybody? Us? Nope, we're not man-made. God made us. One man-made thing in heaven. Nope, not the Ark of the Covenant. His scars. Very good. The scars on Jesus' hand. Be the only man-made thing. The only man-made remnant left in the new earth. As a constant reminder of why I'm there. That's it. That's all that's going to be left. It's an amazing God. I love when it keeps going here. Woo! It says, he was seated on the throne and said, I'm making everything new. Everything new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and Omega. Remember, it's done. It's finished. There's nothing more to be done. He's done. I am the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning and the end. To him who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost from the spring of water of life. He who overcomes will inherit all this, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. A personal relationship. Verse 8, I struggled for 2 weeks why he had to put this in here, but it's a constant reminder of all these things are not going to be there. There's going to be no cowardly. There's going to be no unbelievers. There's going to be nothing vile. Can you imagine the world without nothing, with nothing vile in it? Nothing vile. There's going to be no murders, not even the thought of murder or impropriety, no sexual immorality. There's going to be no practicing of the magic arts or the idolatry or any liars. And I got to reading that list and I thought, man, I'm in trouble. Does anyone else read that and think, oh, he's got a lot of work to do? Because I know some of those things are still in my heart. But when he says all things are made new, he's going to make you new. He says in the flash, in the twinkling of an eye, the old is gone and the new has come. You are going to be a new creation. I don't know what that's going to be like. We got an example when Jesus came back. He's able to walk through walls, walk through doors, and yet sit there and eat and drink and shake hands and say, put your finger in this hole. We're going to be a brand new creation. This whole tent that we got going on right now, that's all worn out, some of us more than others, it's going to be gone. He's going to give you a new creation, a new being that will never wear out, never grow weary, never grow tired. Never have to yawn again, Wes. Wouldn't that be awesome? Diane, are you looking forward to that? New knees, man. Whew! I'm ready. It says, and one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the last seven plagues came and said to me, come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me away in the spirit to a mountain great and high and showed me the holy city of Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God. It shone with the glory of God, and its brilliance was like that of very precious jewel, like jasper, clear as crystal. And it had a great high wall with 12 gates and with 12 angels at the gates. On the gates were written the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. There were 3 gates on the east, 3 on the north, 3 on the south, and 3 on the west. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. You see, he's marrying the old and the new, the 12 apostles and the 12 tribes. I think it's absolutely amazing. He's got 12 gates, and the size of this thing coming down of the New Jerusalem is absolutely amazing. It's 144, according to the measurements, 1,400 miles long, 1,400 miles wide, and 1,400 miles high. That's just the city of Jerusalem. Not the whole creation, just this idea, this concept of God's presence in the world. 1,400. I am terrible with numbers. Has anyone noticed? 1,400. Thank you. That's much easier. 1,400 miles. I was trying to get an idea of how long that is. Someone told me from the tip of Maine to the tip of Florida is about 1,400 miles. Does that sound correct, everybody? Just nod your head and say yes. Okay, very good. 1,400 miles from the tip of Maine to the tip of Florida. From there all the way over to the edge of the Colorado border. That'd be 1,400 miles square is kind of what they're talking about. That is much easier, 1,400 miles square. Not only 1,400 miles square, but 1,400 miles high. Do you realize from Earth to like outer space now, Nathan figured it up, you said what, 300 miles from Earth to space right now. And God's going to make it, and I don't understand these measurements, I don't understand why this is, but 1,400 miles wide, 1,400 long, 1,400 miles high. Can you imagine the layers of amazingness that God could put in 1,400 miles? And that's just the city. We could explore, we could be exploring the city, we could be playing hide and go seek. The only trouble is there's no dark places to hide. We could play hide and go seek on the layers of this New Jerusalem for at least 600,000 years. And more than likely, we get so distracted by the amazingness of all the things that he's created. You know, in this world, I'm amazed of God's creation. I can sit there and watch a hummingbird for an hour. I was over visiting Larry and Kathy this week, and we're sitting there on their little porch, and this hummingbird kept coming up behind Larry. I swear it was going to peck him in the head. It was coming up, and it was just like within inches behind. And he kept going like this because he could hear the right behind him. And it was just amazing. And it wasn't bothering anyone else but Larry. It kept coming up right behind him. And I was smiling because it was. Have you ever really watched a hummingbird? They actually turn their heads as they're flying. It's not like they're always looking straight ahead. They actually turn their little heads with a little bit. It's just amazing, the intricacies of just that tiny bird. And it's just one small, small part of God's creation. And what he's got in store for us, we're living again. We're living in the trash heap. We're living in the refuse of God's creation right now. And it's amazing. It's amazing to me, the wall that's going to be surrounding this city. I don't know if there's actually going to be a wall, but it represents God's protection. From protection from what? We won't need protection from anything because there will be no evil because Satan has been cast down into the pit. So why is there need to be a wall? The wall is just the idea. It's the representation of God's provision, his protection, his love and care around us. I can't imagine living life without worrying. But that's how it's going to be. No worries. It's amazing that it talks about the foundations, the 12 foundations. You're actually going to see the foundations. Now, when you build something now, do you like showcase the foundations? Build a house? Man, I got to show you my foundation. This is so cool. Dig everything away so everyone can see the foundation. But in God's city that he's creating, this foundation is amazing. 12 layers of foundation. We can take a look at the different passages. It says that the disciples are going to be that foundation. And right here it says representing the 12 disciples. All right. And each one of them, it's just not like concrete and re-rod and stuff like that. Each layer of the foundation has a separate precious stone embedded within it. It's beautiful. Just the foundation is beautiful. How amazing. And the gates, the 12 gates with the 12 tribes of Israel on it, each made of a single pearl. An amazing representation, the pearl, the gates. For who's the gate? Who is the gate? How can you get in? Who's the gate? Jesus is the gate. What a perfect representation to be a pearl, because you all know how a pearl's made, right? A pearl starts from being an irritation inside of a clam, a grain of sand, or something that comes and cuts the oyster inside. And so the oyster responds to that injury by covering up with mother-of-pearl layer after layer after layer. That's how a pearl is formed. Guess what the gate is? It's a mother-of-pearl. It's a pearl. One pearl representing Jesus Christ, who was injured so that we might have new life and be healed over by something amazingly beautiful. Again, I don't know if there's actually going to be a pearl gate. It's John's attempt to describe the amazingness of what has been set before him. I don't know if all these details are going to be the exact way that he says it's going to be, but I know that it's going to be incredible. Listen to what it says. It says the 12 gates were the 12 pearls, each gate made of a single pearl. The great city, street of the city was of pure gold like transparent glass. It's just amazing. Think of the details of what's going on here. He says the most precious thing that we hold in this world for a commodity is gold, and the streets are going to be paved with gold. Not just gold, but gold that is clear like glass, of such purity. You're not going to want for anything. There's no need for a temple, no place, no reason to go someplace to worship God, because the presence of God is going to be everywhere. There's going to be a constant reminder because of the light that is constantly shining around us. The gates are never going to be shut, and no night. I know a lot of teenagers are going to really be upset because that's all they want to do is sleep. It seems like. Has anyone else got a teenager right now? When does that stop? I don't remember that. But all they want to do, I mean, ever since school got out, it's like they haven't slept for like 10 years or something. Is that just a phenomenon going on in my house?
No?
Oh, my word. How can anybody sleep that long? Amen? Kayla, you're not doing that, are you? No. No need for sleep. The glory and the honor of the nations will be brought into it. Nothing impure will ever enter it. Did you hear that? Verse 27. Nothing impure will ever enter it, nor will anyone who does what is shameful or deceitful, but only those, and here we are again, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. We can talk about it. We can imagine. We can write stories and books. We can encourage one another, but it all comes down to this. That don't mean nothing if you don't know Jesus. It comes down to that every single chapter of the book of Revelation, because Revelation means I am revealing to you my son, my plan, how it works. I'm holding nothing back from you. I'm showing it to you. And at the end of every chapter, at the end of every day, it comes down to one decision. Do I know Jesus? Because he is the only way, the only truth, and the only life that matters. It comes through him. I know you've heard me say it 1,000 times. Especially lately. What are you living for? Literally, what are you living for? If you're not living for Jesus, if you're not allowing him to be the priority of your life, you're missing out now, and you're going to be missing out big time later. Grab hold of him. Find out what life can be like with Jesus. The last 2 weeks for me, even with the frustration, even with all the different things that have been going on, this idea of what God has in store the idea of living a life without sin, without the dangers, without the fear, without death continually looming in your mind. Just the thought of having that for brief moments in this life frees you to live. And that's why Christ came. He says, I have come to give you life and give it to the abundance. Live life in such a way that Christ will be honored in your life. Live life in such a way with a priority that puts him first, and the relationships that you're making now, make sure that they are a priority in your life. We've got it turned around, and we need to stop and say enough is enough. Allow my life to count for something now so that in eternity, it will be even more amazing in those relationships.